What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Serious Angler Podcast, powered by our friends over X2 Power Batteries. Back with the captain. Thank you for holding down the fort last week while I was out.
Yeah.
I'm back. I'm your host, Bailey Eichbrett. Dude, how was last week's episode? You and Deacon holding down the fort, Mr. Matt Becker.
Oh, it was great. You know, we had some non-forward-facing sonar talk, so that always appeases some of the crowd, and he's had a great start to the season over on the BPT, carrying over his AOI from last year. It was a really good episode. We talked about some power fishing, little cricket tickling, and you know, and all the good stuff.
I love that starting to catch on. Clint in the comments calling it cricket tickling, and now guys are making t-shirts on it.
It's fantastic.
Well, we'll take partial credit for that. Yes. Starting to catch fire. Yes. I wish I could have made the episode. It was just it's been a hectic couple weeks, and I know we were chatting offline, preaching to the choir for the boys we're gonna have on here for the show today. But you know, traveled for that tournament down on Murray, and then went and saw my parents down in Florida, and went to actually got some time with the grandparents, which is very rare for me now, being that they're all in Florida and we're up here in New York. So appreciate you boys allowing me some more time with the family and holding down the fort while I was
out. But anytime.
Yeah. So as we say this on a Thursday, which is very weird for us at the Serious Angler Podcast, going live on a Thursday night. The reason for that is I literally got home, drove through the night, got home around Saturday afternoon, hung out with the wife Saturday, Sunday, and then flew out 6 a.m. Monday for a work trip. Got home last night at midnight, and so it's been a whole debacle past few weeks. So we adjusted to try to make an episode happen for everybody, and we're glad we were able to and catch these boys before things get hectic, classic time for them. But a couple things before we get into today's show is there, I don't know if you saw, Andy, but there's been some things I'll want to dive into it in a later show. That way we can save time for getting our guests on here in a minute. But some of the boys of Wisconsin, and it was funny, I was in Wisconsin literally when this was posted, and I'm sure some folks have seen it, but there's some legislation that they're discussing between the anglers of the Fish and Game. They put out something, you know, the angler surveys to discuss if they should ban one forward facing, but also 360, which makes no sense to me whatsoever. Neither do. But some guys were kind of up in arms saying, I can't believe this is a thing, but just remember that it takes one person just to submit these kind of things, and then it becomes a discussion. So again, there has to be a whole vote. So don't freak out. But I thought that was interesting that came about, and somebody wanted to ban 360. Like, that it's been around for how many years now? I don't understand the uprising of that.
Anti-sonar is what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the amount of comments that we get literally just basically talking about both sides of it is, some boomers a little bit angry. That's okay. Yeah. That also, X2 Power Batteries are heavily discounted right now. I don't know if anybody is in the market for them. I mean, we always have our discount code year round, but right now on some models, there's up to $200 off, which $200 off of some lithium batteries is pretty steep. Oh yeah. So you guys can take advantage of that. Unfortunately, next week, Andy, you and I will not be able to be at Red Crest. We went last year. It was a good time hanging out with some of the crew down there. The X2 crew was down there. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to make it. We'll try to do some coverage here from home, but we'll be interesting to see how that goes down. But what we will be at is the Classic here in a couple weeks. Unfortunately, we won't have the whole crew, but you guys are stuck with my ugly mug at the Classic, and I hope to see a bunch of y'all down there. We'll be doing some shows at the X2 booth, and we'll have a bunch of hats, too, to give out. So if you see me, or you're at the X2 booth, ask for a Serious Angler hat, and we'll be able to hook you guys up. Andy, anything else I might have missed before we get down our guest for today?
Did you see this? Banks open kayak fishing. Someone else proposed a question about not allowing cats outside because they kill birds, as opposed to like the forward-facing sonar talk and banner. Like, it's just, you know, people will write a suggestion for whatever they want. But no,
I'm all about the satire.
Fork was wild. That's all I want to say. Like, insane. The two guys we have coming on, I'm sure they can explain a little bit of it for us, since they both got a century belt, which is pretty incredible in the rookie season. So,
yeah, I don't know why we're sitting here talking about it. I think we should just bring these guys in. I mean, to be honest,
you can start with Wes and leave the other one in the
We're calling him the other one. Yeah, we'll bring Wes on here in a second. I want to say quick is back with the live show this week. We do have a part two to this show. We're trying to get consistent with that again with travel and everything. Sometimes we have weeks where it's just we can crank out a quick interview with a guest, and it might be just a part one, but we're gonna have a part two tonight. Later after we get done chatting with Wes and Kyle, we'll be getting Trevor Lowe and our boy Andrew Hayes from over at Tackle Talk on the show tonight for a little bit of a fish it, box it, or trash it. I think people like that the first time we did that this year. So we're bringing that full circle. We're gonna have some fun with that. But yeah, Andy, I think we should bring on Mr. Wesley Gore. Never been on the show before. What's going on, Wes?
First time.
How are y'all? Thank y'all.
Yeah, man. It's been a little hectic trying to schedule. Of course, I think you know with your travel partner, everything's a little bit always hectic.
He's way more hectic than me, but 18 days gone from home, and it hasn't slowed down since I've been back. So,
heck yeah, man. But it, for good reason. You guys are grinders. Hectic is a good thing. If things are slow in your guys' neck of the woods, it's probably not a good thing.
If you're not busy, then it's not good at all.
That's right. Well, dude, obviously we're going to get Kyle on here in a second because we got some awesome stuff to talk about with you guys. But being that it's your first time on the show, we got to ask you, it's our tradition thing we do here for new guests, is how did you get started in the first place? Who is to blame for this lifelong addiction that has led you to being on the Elite Series?
I guess no one truly. I've always grew up outdoors, I guess hunting, fishing, but I mean, it was just something that I love more than hunting. My dad was a big hunter, and I just decided to give it a shot, and it just grew from there. I mean, I started fishing at 11 years old. He got the first boat, and I've been on the water multiple days every week since then till now. I'm 23, so you're looking at 12 years and 3 to 7 days a week on the water. So, I mean, I live 15 minutes from the Coosa River. I was actually on it today. I'm burnt to death because it was 8 degrees. So, I mean, I go fishing all the time.
What part of the Coosa is home?
I live right – I call Lay Lake and Lake Mitchell. I mean, I'm about 10 to 15 minutes from either one. I mean, I live right there by them. I was on Lay today. That's the one I prefer to fish.
All right.
Sweet. So, I mean, but I just – it just happened. I mean, that's all I guess you can really say. I mean,
yeah.
I've just done well in high school and thought I had opportunity at it. Went to college for a little while and then said I'm done with that. You know, had the right support behind me and decided to fish the opens, and here we are.
Hell yeah, man. It's freaking awesome. And now you're catching 100 pounds of Texas bass.
I usually do terrible in big fish tournaments. It's crazy. I'm usually a grinder kind of guy. You know, like when 13 or 14 pounds is good, I do well. But I don't know. I kicked it in the gear. I guess I can catch big ones too.
You sound like a Coosa guy.
Yeah, I'm used to catching like 18 pounds and that being good. You know, more than that, it's a little above my pay grade, but we made it happen this past week.
Yeah, a couple dirty 30s and no, as you're rethinking where you're living, probably.
I had the opportunity to have an absolute giant back the first day. I should have had 40. I mean, with ease. I mean, I had a 2.12 and a 3.4 and had 32.5.
Good.
And I jumped
did,
off.
Did you drop a couple?
Oh, yeah. I jumped off a 7 and a 6. And then I kind of laid off of them because I hit a wave running to another area and I ripped my graph mounts out of the floor. So I started and went fishing protected stuff and just flipped the bank the rest of the day. And I caught me whopping 3.4 and 2.12, you know. So if I could have stayed out there the rest of the day without my grass falling in the water, you know, I probably could have managed a little more. But I don't know if I could have recouped a 7 and a 6. But I should have had 40 by like 9 that morning.
Yeah.
Insane.
Well, it looked like a fun event, regardless of where you were at on the lake, it seemed. But it obviously predominantly was – we'll get into it a little bit more with Kyle here. But being that you're a Coosa guy, any insight or prediction as how it's going to go down for Red Crest next week on Lay?
I just fished the other day, and I probably caught 70 bass. I don't know if it's best five or
– I think they do best five for Red Crest.
I don't know.
No, they're doing every fish counts cumulative. I looked into it. Yeah.
I mean, it's it's going to take like, if it doesn't change a whole lot, you could see probably record breaking weights. I probably had 180 to 200 pounds with all my fish today. You know, the average bite's a 3-pounder.
Zero are they fun.
All fed up pre-spawners, pretty much.
I don't want to give away nothing. Not someone may watch it. You know, fair enough. But you can catch them doing whatever you want. But if they're doing every fish counts, you're going to see some of the same tactics you've seen all year play. You're at big time on spotted bass. I mean, we'll just say that.
All right. Yeah. No, that's appreciated going into next week.
Yeah.
It's been weird because, like, I thought it was recent years, Andy. I could be wrong, but they had every fish. And then it was best five for Red Crest, unless maybe that was heavy hitters. But I
wish it was best five. Then it would take away the if it was best five, somebody would win going down the bank. There's some big ones up there. Yeah. I mean, real big ones.
All right.
But I don't even know what the rules are, so who knows?
Yeah,
we'll report back.
With last Tuesday with Matt Becker, we were talking a little bit about Red Crest, and I discovered as I was looking at it, talking to him, that it is cumulative, most
ever
fish.
Ever fish counts. Well, you're just going to see them wreck spots. The lake won't – you'll get to see how great of a spotted bass fishery it is. And obviously you'll have some of the stubborn largemouth guys, but they'll never be able to keep up. I mean, you're going to look at – they're going to get 12 to 15 bites a day, and they'll be 2.5 to 6-pounders. But the guys that spotted bass fish are going to catch 30 to 100 a day, and they're going to be 2.5 to 4-pounders, and they're just – I mean, somebody's going to catch 200 pounds.
Damn.
I don't know, not unless I just know. I mean, I fish there all the time. I mean, maybe it's just – it seems like that way to me, but I really didn't try a whole lot today. I mean, I kind of just piddled around. I didn't run around. I just fished like one little zone, and I caught that many. And it's happening in a lot of other places that has bigger ones. I didn't even go to where – I mean, my best five weighed probably a little over 20 today, spotted bass. So
Is that pretty good for lay?
I mean, it's pretty regular now. I mean, it's 21, 22 is pretty regular. For spotted bass, that's a big bag. I mean, I had all spotted bass. I had like a little over 20. So who knows? Damn. I wish that it was special.
Here he was saying he can only catch 15 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess Fork has rubbed off on you a little bit.
Lay's a special place. It's the best on the Coosa by far. I mean, it's changed to be the best spotted bass fishery out of all the lakes now, where it used to not be. I mean, they're big there now. I mean, all of them. I mean, you set the hook on one, it's a 3-pounder. You catch 30 or 40 or 50 that size a day. They're just so fat. I mean, they're not that big a fish. You're going to be really surprised. Like a 16-incher weighs 3 pounds.
Damn.
So they're butterballs. They're that big.
Like a Great Lake smallmouth.
Yeah, they literally look like crappie or smallmouth when you catch them. They're spotted bass.
What is it? Somebody else proposed a question about not allowing.
Oh, I didn't mean to do that. I hit it with.
I was like, wait, what are we looking at?
Sorry.
Well, let's bring in our other guest here for tonight. Wild card number two, Mr. Kyle Patrick. What's going on, man?
What's up, boys? Did I hear?
Welcome back.
Thanks, Andy. Dude, I overheard you guys saying you're not going to Red Crest. Why? It's like the biggest event in bass fishing.
Oh, here you go.
You aren't going to be there?
Are you going to be there?
Oh. Well, no, I can't be there, but I just figured, you know, since it's such a big event, you guys would, you know. I'm sorry.
We're here. Here's for your soapbox, Kyle. We'll get you right here by so.
Speech. Oh man.
No, honestly, man. I will say last year when we went to Red Crest, they treated us amazing. Like the team over there, Joe Apogger, Charity, like they treated us amazing. Yeah.
No, I mean I was just joking around. But no, I think they probably do a pretty good job, but I feel like it's just really hard to compete with the Bassmaster Classic.
It really is. I mean we're fully
weeks.
Yeah, we're fully transparent here in that, and like in the one, the travel that's back to back, and you know, with trying for us to fly down, like we're not raking in money here on this podcast, flying, you know, traveling on our own dime, and so like for the team, it's like it just made more sense. One, because our sponsors for the show are actually going to be at the Classic, and they weren't going to be at Red Crest, so we're like, well, it just made more logistical sense. We'll cover the Red Crest from home, but nonetheless, I'm just excited for the Classic. It's always big, it's always a spectacle, and I love Andy and I love it because we up here in New York, Kyle, as you know, you don't get to see too many people from the industry when you're in New York.
Yeah.
Or Boston.
Like the Gunnersville ramp where you see half the dang industry.
Yeah, right. Gunnersville Ramp, you just park your chair right on the lawn and literally see, like, you know, probably 25 of the guys competing in the Classic in like a day.
Pretty much.
Crazy.
Well, dude, I guess first and foremost, we talked about it a little bit with Wes, but like, rookies, second event, and you guys are already in the Century Club. How the hell does that feel?
It's pretty cool, man. It's just a wild thing for me and Wesley. I mean, I've gotten to know Wesley really well. Just some backstory. I called up Wesley out of the blue. How long before the start of the elites, Wesley?
A month, probably. It was probably a month.
Yeah, a month or two, maybe. I mean, we didn't have much time anyway. And I was just like, dude, I don't know you, basically. Like, we knew of each other, obviously. But I was like, you know what? Let's travel together. Let's try to make, like, a solid partnership. Because it is hard. It's nice to have someone when you're traveling like we are. It's nice to have someone, A, that you can trust. B, just to have your back in situations, you know, like, your boat breaks down in practice. Like, you know, we have friends out there, but it's still just nice to have that one guy that you can rely on, you know, across the board. And I just called him out of the blue, and it's been awesome, you know, for the past two events. And I don't foresee it, you know, anything bad happening, Wes.
Hell, if it hadn't happened yet, it ain't going to. We fish bumper to bumper at the most of the tournaments already.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, we've done really well fishing the same water. I mean, truly, you know, he finished 11th at Toledo. I finished 21st, and he finished what?
Seventh.
Yeah. And I finished 9th, and we both had 100 pounds, and we were pretty much fishing the same water. So that just shows you how many fish are in one area. Like, we caught 225 pounds of bass in pretty much three zones.
Yeah,
on Lake York.
Yeah,
three zones.
Is that because you guys? Do you think you guys fish completely different, or what do you think the reason for that is? Just different, like, rotation, or what?
Found really good areas, truthfully. Right. I mean,
I agree. I mean, and we were trying to fish what was happening. I mean, it probably wasn't as good as what it was. It was better in the tournament than it was practice, I would say. Like, they came more and more. We were, like, going to areas that way were coming to us, I guess. We were just fishing spawning bays, you know, just catching them on the way in. But
staging.
A little shallower than most people. They truly wasn't even staging, dude. You would literally chase them in. Like, you would just see them swimming in, like, 2 and 3 foot going in, and you would just catch them.
So basically, you got two guys with ADHD that are just watching these fish go left and right. And you're like, oh, that way, squirrel.
Yeah, he committed more to that bite more than I did. I had one little zone that was a little deeper that I called them jerking in the morning times, but that disappeared pretty quick. I mean, once it got warm, it was better for Kyle. Like, the first day when it was cold, I had a better bag than Kyle barely, but he still, like, in the evening time, he caught all his weight. I caught like 32 pounds by 10 o'clock. You know, yeah. And he caught 32 pounds. He caught all his late, you know, which they were pulling up in the warmer weather. But once it actually stabilized and was warm, it was better for him. So I actually had to fish shallower, you know, the last 3 days of the event. You know, eventually I swam a jig too. So
had to sneak that in
there. Yeah, dude. The PR people, you know, sent him a message. Hey,
Who'd you put on speed dial before the episode? Like, listen, I'm going to talk about no forward facing stuff real fast.
Now we'll get to that, because I genuinely
think that is a genuine topic that I think we can, like, dive into and be pretty neutral on it. I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the idea of recognizing, hey, I'm going to need like 50 pounds to catch Trey in this, so I'm going to go throw a swim jig and have some fun. I think that was a good, probably soul decision for you to be like, I'll just go fun fish. And then two, like a PR player, like, hey, people will like me more.
Look, like, where I'm from, I mean, that's where it was created. So, I mean, hell, you got to go do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoy doing it more than anything. So, hell, let's go to the bank.
Hell yeah, man. So has it gotten competitive in the house already then between you guys?
Nah, we give each other a little crap, but it's not much of nothing. I don't think we said anything till day four, you know, like till we're both like,
yeah.
I finally, like, we were like, it was like late on the last day, and I looked at him and I said, you know what, Kyle? He's like, what? I said, I get the best bed next time too.
Okay, so okay. So dive into this for folks who don't know, because I jumped in late.
All right, so this is how it originally started. We rolled up to Texas after Toledo. Like, we're pretty beat because we had just done live mix and, like, you know, we're going in starting practice the next day. And we roll in, and it was one of those classic Airbnb situations where one room is just, I was telling Andy before we went live, one room is just, it was like five-star hotel room. And then the rest of the house, I was sleeping on a metal, straight metal bed frame that every time I rolled over, it was like, and I was like, okay. So I get
a washer. Andy was on like a full size or like a twin bed or something.
Dude, no, it was not a twin. It was a single. It was a single bed. I was literally like this.
It's like one of those like Ozark Trail cots that you get from Walmart.
Yes. And so we go in there and we're like trying to figure out like, okay, who's going to get the best room? And then I think Wesley was like, well, it's whoever finished highest in the last tournament. And I was like, okay, well, now you can say that, sure. But then we rock, paper, scissors, he won. And then he was like, from now on, we're going to do the last tournament. Whoever finishes highest gets the room pick, which I think is the most fair way to do it.
Like, there's no money on the line. It's just, I get sleeping regardless.
Sleeping right
on a hardwood floor. I mean, he don't even care.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, if you're splitting the house costs, I mean, that's probably the best way to go about it.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, I mean, granted, it's only two events in, but I mean, I think that system might be working for you guys because, you know, Kyle, you're sitting in 11th for AOI, and Wesley, you're in 6th. So I'd say the competition's working for you guys.
Yeah,
you're like, screw the elites.
We're fishing for room. Yeah, we don't care about 10 grand. We don't care about 10 grand, 15 grand. We just care about the next best room. That's all that matters.
The best room where I can sleep.
Yeah. You guys are coming back in and checking Bass Track just to see how each other did versus where you stand.
All right. Where is he?
Wesley tried to say it's by each day.
That'd be a lot of cleaning.
That means we got to swap each time. Nah, we ain't doing that.
No. Oh, that was Lee.
Lee was trying to say it was by each day.
Yeah,
that means we'd have to get our stuff. That would be ridiculous.
No, that would be ridiculous.
Well, Chinese fire drill in the weeds day. Yeah,
exactly.
Good lord. Oh. Well, we'll start with Kyle and then with Wes, but like briefly walk us through your guys' fork event. Like, did you break it down in practice together, or like what was your guys' approach?
Yeah, we broke it down. I mean, both lakes we've broken down together because it's really helpful to do that. Like, you know, you can do it on your own. And we both know that we're both capable of doing it on our own. Right. And you know, it just makes it a little bit faster, and you can find like my open strategy, probably different than Wesley's, but I think we talked about it on the show last time I was on the show, but like, you know, I had A spots, B spots, C spots. Right. But when you combine, when you're totally sharing everything, like I called up Wesley within the first, the first 3 hours. Right. And I was like, hey, you know, this is what I found. And then he would call me in 3 hours. Okay. I found something over here similar. Right. And then when you do that, you can snowball off each other. So by the end of even the second day of practice, you have so many different areas and a really good idea of what's happening in each section of the lake, so that by the time, you know, the third day comes around, you know, you can really hone in how you're, you know, that whole practice day, you can kind of, you know, get a better idea of, you know, this is what I need to do in order to like, not guarantee a successful event, but like be a little more confident in it. And you know, like, at Fork, it was like pretty odd. I think we dialed it in really quickly, but you know, some events it can take a long time, and you may only find a few spots, but with two people, it just expedites the process a little bit, which leads to like more areas to you know, capitalize on in the tournament.
And that's Adam,
Wesley, let's hear what you have to say on it.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, generally we start practice, one of us fishes like the shallower part of the water column, and the other one fishes, you know, out. Generally I take out and he takes in, and we just go from there. I mean, and whoever starts getting more, I guess, having success, then we both kind of lock in on that. And once we kind of get a solid, I guess, game plan for that, like at Fork, we kind of figured out like every zone in a day and a half. Like we had every creek that was good. Would you not agree with that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Like we started just looking deeper and deeper.
And, dude, at Toledo, Wesley, I had seen that bite, but I was a little nervous about that offshore, like, minnow bite that everyone was on. Or not everyone, but a lot of guys were doing. And Wesley had it dialed in. So what he did was he was just like, hey, man, like, just, you know, it's there, but it's not as fast and furious, and it takes a lot. Like, just stay at it. Like, it could be as simple like as someone just saying like, no, it's like, trust me, you're doing the right thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like just reassuring you almost that, you know, there is that bite. Yeah. But like, you know, keep at it out here for a little bit, you know, it can be like little things. And Wesley, that was a big help at Toledo.
I mean, he would just, you couldn't put your troll motor down and catch one in like 10 minutes. I mean, that's just not, it didn't work that way. You had to just like, if you were going to do it, you had to commit to it. Like at Toledo, I had two rods out, and that's what I'd done the entire event. I mean, if I needed another rod, I'd get it out and I'd, you know, out of the rod box.
Right. And then
I started with two poles every day.
And then another thing about Toledo was like throughout the event, coming home each day of the day of the tournament, because it's a 4-day event if you're doing well, obviously, and then, you know, the three, hopefully. But like after day two or after day one, I was like, hey dude, I found a grass pocket, right? Like if you need something on day two, if you're, you know, say you need a big one, like come into this grass stretch, and you ended up coming in to and catching one, right? So it's little things like that make a huge difference. And, you know, he put us on the main pattern there. Like, and then like, you know, I found like a little secondary deal that he could fall back on maybe. Right. Like, and it just, it's not a one way street. We found that it goes like, it's really, you know, cyclical, I guess would be the word, but it's,
yeah, I mean, you can learn more as you go on, as long as you got a primary zone. But I mean, like he's talking about, I called a pretty good one, like a 4-pounder, which was a good one at Toledo. I struggled the second day. I went from catching like 30 or 40 the first day and throwing back 4-pounders to, I mean, I caught 5 keepers the second day. I mean, they just completely vacated on me. And I actually caught, I mean, it was like my 3rd keeper, and it was a 4-pounder in that little grass area that he was talking about, you know. And then it got my day back on the track, and I caught a 5-pounder, and I finished my limit and made it. And then they all showed up the next day, and I caught 23-something.
Yeah. You got really good on day 3. Wesley's famous for 11th places, by the way. So make mental note of that. If throughout the year he gets like 3 more 11ths, like I think in the Opens last year he had like 3 or 4.
I
have a bunch of
11th. Your lucky number, huh?
I finished 11th at Toledo in the Open and 11th there in the Elites. How? I mean, what's the odds of that? Come on.
Hey, it's good. So
I think you take 11th. 11th will get you in classics, man.
Yeah,
I'll take it.
Right, if you finish 11th all year, I mean, you're probably gonna be in the top 3 in standings, I would think.
Too. It must be a duo thing, because Kyle, you're literally in 11th right now for AOI.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And what are you like 11? You're what, 11 or 12 points? Is it 11 points behind Wesley in the standings?
Let me see. I got it up.
12.
Wesley got 190.
11.
It's 12.
Oh man. Yeah. Close enough.
12 points back.
Well, round down.
Well, so here's a question for you guys. So, I mean, Young Guns are obviously kicking some butt right now with Trey leading AOI. I mean, you got him and Milken, two other rookies that are leading AOI. You got right in front of you, Wesley, you got Kyoya, and behind you is Coop. And then, like, Young Guns are killing it, but, like, Kyle, like, looking at who's right in front of you is Jordan Lee, and then behind you is Corey Johnston. Like, set in for you guys yet? You're like, holy shit, we're on the Elite Series right now.
Like, what's it like sitting at the boat ramp on day one and everybody's like piled in there?
Wesley,
I try not to even like focus on that. No, it really hasn't set in. I mean, it has more than what it did before we started fishing, I would say. I mean, you realize that you're doing it, I mean, full time. I mean, you're with the big guys. I mean, the big dogs, whatever you want to call them. the people that has careers and have already made their legacy. But I mean, if you think about that stuff, you'll never be successful because you're getting diminished in their spotlight the whole time. So you have to make your own spotlight. That's the way I look at it. So I try not to focus on them. Obviously, I give them credit where it's due, it's deserved, and I don't want to push my boundaries with them. But you know, it's all about making your own spotlight and, you know, your own legacy. So I try to focus on that more than I do everybody else's.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Kyle's just like his opens picture on the first day of the elite season.
That is true. Look, so like I feel the exact same way now, but you know, for me, I am like such a, like, I mean, we all are, but I am like overly diehard fan of bass fishing. I always have been. So seeing all my idols, you know, around, I was like, yeah, this is pretty wild. You know, I was getting the jittery, like, you know, like excitement. But dude, once Dave Mercer, and then, okay, so Dave Mercer calls your name through the you know, like talks about your achievements, like, you know, Bassmaster Classic qualifier, Opens winner, you know, and then you're running 70 down the lake. You're thinking about it for the first like 10 seconds, but then dude, you're just in a derby. So all I think about is catching the biggest five fish I possibly can. And that eats me up all day. I don't even have time to think about anything else. And I'm sure Wesley's the same. I'm sure a lot of guys are like that. Like I just think about how to best catch five big fish. But in the backside, like, you know, at the meeting, I was like, you know, a little starstruck at first, but then, you know, it all just feels natural because you've been, you know, I mean, like there was more for me. I felt more pressure in an open than I did in my first Elite Series event.
100%. 100. It's not even really close. Like 100, way more.
You think it was just a prep thing? Like it just got you used to that?
I think it did a really good job of that.
I mean, I think it prepares you for that, but I think you're also more like focused on, I got to get here. And you can't slip up. And obviously you don't want to slip up in elites, but I feel like it relieves you once you're there, you know, a lot more than it does when you're trying to make it. You know, I don't know.
You can't slip up in AOY, right? But like you can have a 70th place finish in the elites and it's not detrimental to your like career, right? Yeah. In the opens, if you have the equivalent of a 70th, which is a 140, right? 140 or so, yeah. You're in trouble. Like it is extremely challenging to dig yourself out of that hole. So I think that's where there's less stress for.
You can still make a classic with a 70th.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
the thing about it is like there's 100 guys versus 225. You're all doing it at a high level and you work. I guess all those guys kind of understand it a little better. You can work around them a little better than you can in opens. I mean, some of that stuff, the opens is a dogfight. I mean, and obviously the elites are too, but like you can fish around people. Like I've been around Kyle, but I've also been around several other anglers this year already in two events. And like, there's no conflicts. You just fish your own water. That don't happen in open. I mean, at all. I mean, you're always worried about somebody being on this and it making or breaking your tournament. And I don't know. It's a lot more stressful to me, in my opinion.
It's probably a nice, honestly, breath of fresh air.
Oh, absolutely.
So for the most part, guys are more respectful of all that. Can probably communicate better, like if you're in the area with them.
Yeah, like you understand how to communicate better. Maybe that's a good way to put it. Like they, you know, obviously they'll pick their zone, and it's just there's a lot more moral in it, I guess. Or
yeah, you know, way more. Like I make sure I did it in the opens too, but a lot of guys, like it's simple things, right? Like, you know. I had like one of my primary areas, or not actually, it was technically, you know what I'm talking about, where they were schooling back there, Wesley, at Ford. One of my literally on that area sat Brandon Polinick and Jeff Gustafson, literally within 200 yards of each other. And I roll up and I'm like, oh, and I you know, I'm easing in and I kind of just yell out, I'm like, hey, man, you mind if I just fish to this dock and like cut across up here and down there? Like, yeah, man, go ahead. You know, like it's just simple things like that that I felt like was, if I were in Brandon Polinick or you know, Jeff Gustafson's shoes in the open, I wouldn't have someone say that to me. They would just come in, maybe, you know, get real close. Like I've had people in the opens, man, and you know, I'm not throwing shade, but you know, they do things without a proper sort of discussion prior. Like that's the courtesy thing to do. And I feel like there's more of that than
I feel like it's the pressure that makes people do that. You know, knowing that you can't mess up, it's like, I got to get right here versus in this. It seems a lot more relaxed, but it's not at the same time. I mean, the fishing part of it is. It's not as intense.
I mean, part of that, too, is that there's only 100 boats, right?
Yeah,
so there's a lot more areas. Like, you could say, okay, well, I mean, yeah, they're there, but, you know, I can cycle to a different area and then come back, and maybe they've moved on, whereas the open's, like, someone else is just coming in there. Like, if you don't get there and it's a good area, that one guy leaves, and if you leave for a second, someone's pulling in. Like, there's just that many people, that many boats, you know?
And like you in an open, you can't, for me, I didn't seem like I could move around as well. Like if I got in an area, there was fish, I just locked down versus in elites. Like I can run stuff because of less boats. So you don't have to worry about stuff being available as much, you know, availability was a tough thing in opens, and it just still shows how good those guys are. I mean, you find the same fish, even in elites. I mean, a bunch of us found the same fish versus in opens is the same way. It's just that versus 20 guys finding it like they do in elites, you got 70. You know, and you're right. Fishing on them.
Yeah.
What do you guys think was one of the reasons the rookies did so well in Texas? Like, I think all of the rookies are in the top 41 right now.
I mean, the true answer to that is live scope. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's forward facing sonar stuff.
I'll add to that. This might be a hot take. So I think that the rookies, I mean, you look at all the rookies, like think about what come on to your mind, right? You just think about, you know, all of them individually. I truly believe that every single rookie was working. And I'm not saying that the normal guys weren't, but we were working overtime and had a chip on our shoulders. Like we just came out of this gauntlet. Like we have to show out. Like there was a little bit, I feel like there was a little bit more of a sense of urgency, not urgency is the wrong word, but we had something to prove. And I think that, you know, obviously we just came out of a gauntlet, right? The season ended way later than the other guys. Right. So they get off the water. They already have their sponsorships dealt with for next year for the most part, right? You know, maybe they go hunt a little bit. You know, they've got everything lined up. For us, it was we never stopped for the most part. It was the opens ended. We had, what, 2 or 3 months. Yeah. So we had to figure out getting sponsors to help pay, right? We had to figure out, you know, if people did some pre-fishing. I went to Texas. I did a day and a half. I didn't even do Toledo because it was blowing 40, but yeah. I did a day on Toledo, a day and a half on Fork. Really didn't help me much, which is a different story. But, you know, everything was so like tight that I think there wasn't really an off season for us. You know what I'm saying? So we kind of just rolled right in. We took all the momentum from, you know, the top 10 in AOI and just moved it right in. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. You know,
I kind of want to add something. So I know this is something we're going to get into, but I'm just going to go ahead and jump into it. So all of us were considered live scapers. So I'm just going to go ahead and just jump off in this because it's just something that I got to go over. But whenever you fish the opens and you come through the process we did and it's available to 225 guys, you have to come semi-predominant on it to find fish that are not being fished for by everybody else. Mm-hmm. So I think what's happened is when you're in a non-tournament series and you have to in the opens where you're repetitively fishing against 225 guys versus three in the before, you could get by doing other things. But to be consistent, I'm not saying that I didn't catch fish down to make because I love to and I do that, but to be consistent in a non-tournament format in the opens with that amount of anglers, you have to semi become predominantly you have to rely on it to an extent. Like you have to find fish for it. So what I'm saying is if it's available, we're going to practice for it. Like just like if it wasn't available, like that's the thing, like all us rookies and even some of the guys that are already on there, you have to practice for live scope, and we're more adjusted to doing that because we're not used to available water. if that makes sense. That makes
yeah, it makes complete. That was a really good way to put it. Like,
The bank is never available.
The best example is this: Toledo. 100 guys on Toledo. If you took LiveScope away, dude, everyone could have their own cove. An entire cove all to themselves. Every guy on the Elite could have their own cove pretty much. In the Opens, it's not even remotely. There'd be 3 guys in a cove, which is a lot different. Right?
I think that's made, obviously we use it a lot, but it's a tool and it's available. So you have to practice for it. Mm-hmm. But we become more dependent upon it through the EQs
I'm going to stop you right there. It's not dependent.
No, but
we have adapted our practices to bring live scope to the table a little more, right? So like, say we find some bank fish. Okay. Now we're going to go out and find some scope fish. Whereas I think a lot of guys are like, found some bank fish. Let's try to just go duplicate that bank bite. Right. We're like, okay, we can duplicate that bank bite. We need to find some scope fish, because if you didn't in the Opens, it was like you weren't going to make it.
You would never have fish. You would be splitting fish with somebody constantly. And the bad thing is you would even be splitting scope fish. So that's why we've all become adapted to use it in 30 foot or 2 foot. Because it's literally such a dogfight to catch a freaking fish in an open that you try to utilize it in every depth range you go to. You try to just find fresh fish. And that, when you have to do that repetitively over and over and over, me and Kyle both fished all 9 2 years in a row. And the problem the first year is I wasn't as adaptive with it as I was this past year. And that's the whole difference. And the people that made it the years before us that just didn't have a whole lot said about it was more adaptive with it than we were the year before in 2021. That's the whole, or 2022. That's the whole difference.
Right. Yeah. And to piggyback off that last thing, so if you looked at my Opens, if you looked at 3 years of me fishing the Opens, now granted, the first year I only fished that one division, right? I did not catch them in that one division. And then the second year I had a really slow start. I caught the first 3 tournaments. I fished the bank and I luckily caught two. I caught them in 2 tournaments on the bank at Pickwick, or not at Pickwick, at Cherokee. I caught them on the bank and I caught them on the bank at the next one. And then slowly I realized, okay, live scope, I'm getting better at it. I think I need to utilize it. And that's when my sort of the start of when I started to really understand how to fish the Opens, right? And you saw that because I was 3rd or 4th in AOI in all 9. And then at Red River, I used live scope when I shouldn't have.
You should
have. And I finished 178th and it ruined my season, right? So at that point, I had got on this trajectory where live scope, like I was on the bank and then it was okay, live scope. And then when a bank fishing tournament came around, I bombed. So that really was a big lesson for me where, okay, look, you can't always rely on live scope.
There's a time and place for it. You just have to, it's not as dominant as what it seemed. We literally were in Texas pre-spawn. There is thousands of pieces of vertical
timber.
There's vertical objects everywhere. What else could you say everywhere in the middle of the lake? You couldn't ask for a better setup of that. If we wouldn't have been in that situation, it wouldn't have been as dominant.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that you had to do that, but it got cold, all the females backed out off the bank. What do you want me to go do? First day, catch 12 pounds down the bank? I ain't doing that.
Yeah. I find it hilarious, the people that are still complaining about it when we're watching records almost fall. That Trey was a pound off of the all-time record. We're watching just giant after giant go down. Not just everybody throwing a freaking jig head minnow. Guys are throwing glides, guys throwing wacky rigs, Nikos. There's so many different ways you're catching them.
Dude, I caught 111 pounds on a wacky worm.
I cannot say that.
Oh, wacky worm.
I caught my 100-pound fish on a wacky worm. How about that?
Dude, and a jig, but I caught 32 pounds on day one on a wacky worm.
Yeah. Here's one thing I want to call out quick. He's in the comments here, the burning season, and he says, so what he is saying before forward-facing sonar, he couldn't catch him. No. I think what he's saying before forward facing sonar, with the way the opens are laid out, if you're going to go fish the bank, your chances of catching them consistently are dramatically lower than if you can find fish that no one else is accessing, which you can therefore access with forward facing sonar.
Like I said, right? Cherokee Lake, Cooper Gallant won that event on live scope, right? He was throwing a minnow. I fished the bank on a jig and I finished 22nd, right? Then I forget the next event we went to, but fished that one on the bank. But then the next event, I remember in practice, there were a lot of guys on the bank and dude, every fish was getting caught in practice. There's 225 guys, 125 of those guys, they stick every fish in practice and post about how great their practice was, right? So they're burning fish.
Another thing I've noticed. We didn't even say nothing about that. So like, you have 5 days of practice in an open. Like literally it changes so much. And you'll get there on day one and everybody blasts and you're like, oh, this is gonna be fun. But by day four of practice, you're like, I don't know if I can get a bite doing anything.
Yeah. So, but the answer, I don't know who that was, but to answer his question, like, dude, my roots are in shallow water fishing. That's what I love to do. Now it's different shallow water fishing than Wes likes because I'm not from, the Coosa River and, swimming a jig. I mean, it works in New York, but I've always fished shallow.
I thought it was a thing too.
Yeah. The issue is, is like what Bailey said is it's the opens. You have to be so incredibly consistent that the shallow bite, you mix it in. This year, dude, I mixed in a lot of shallow and deep and shallow and deep throughout the each tournament day. I mean, Wheeler Lake, I caught seven out of my 10 fish I weighed and I caught a check was on the bank.
Yeah. So that I had that question in an earlier podcast. I actually had to the guy asked me to tally up every bass I weighed in an open. And he said, how many did you catch with forward facing sonar and how many did you catch down the bank? And it literally came out to almost equal. It was like 50-50. I mean, I qualified for the elites throwing a frog in a canal at Harris Shane. I mean,
hell yeah.
So yeah. I'm not saying I would rather go down the bank. That's where how I grew up was literally flipping a jig, throwing a spinnerbait and swimming willow grass and dollar grass and punching mats. I mean, but it's just fishing has changed. So the only way to be competitive if something is getting beat to death constantly is finding fresh fish. And that is a tool that allows you to find fresh fish. And when it comes to making checks, I'm going to do what I have to do to get paid. I mean, that's just what it is.
Bailey, here's another thing that we haven't touched on. Sorry, I'll let you ask the next question. Yeah. The other thing that we haven't touched on is, but this is what people aren't talking about. And it's that our industry, it's growing, right? Like the fishing industry, bass fishing, tournament bass fishing is growing at such a fast pace. Look at the high school tournaments, okay? Thousands. Dude, there's 1,000 boat high school tournaments. Literally, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the South, like think about Sam Rayburn. Throughout a year, how many boats in tournaments, like how many boats are on that lake combined in a tournament throughout the year? It's probably 100,000 plus, right?
Yeah.
And it's only getting bigger. So as that happens, we're not talking about how much these fish are pressured on the bank and in obvious places. Like back in 2001, when there was no live scope, side imaging just got introduced. Everyone was fishing the bank. When side imaging got introduced, you saw, Keith Combs use side imaging to get away from the crowd, right? Offshore, deep cranking, and dominate. And KVD did the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same exact thing. It's just happening in a different time technologically. And, it's just different because back then maybe it grew by, 50,000 anglers. And now our tournaments – and our tournament industry is growing by 200,000 anglers. So there's just more pressure, more fish being caught. Now they're being released, but they're adapting to that constant pressure on these lakes. So you take live scope away, man, the weights in tournaments are going to be bad.
Yeah, I personally think that we need to be, we're not looking at the right thing right now. I wish I wish we could put the stop button on anybody talking about forward-facing sonar, positive or negative, for, say, the next year, 2 years. Let biologists actually go and study this thing. I mean, granted, this tech's been out for, what, eight or some odd years now.
Yeah.
Oh, they've absolutely been looking into this thing. Like, it's not been a secret. It's, but I know there's some
on Lake St. Clair ripping a tube through sandgrass was catching them on scope.
Right, right. But what I'm saying is, like, biologists are actually really going hard on studies on this right now. Let's give them the time to, like, the people that can actually spit facts, not just people that have opinions. Because right now, this is all this is a matter of opinion on people that are for it or against it. I would love to just halt that. And then really the conversation right now should be, look, we all love tournament fishing, but how many tournaments should we actually have? How much should each fishery, like the TVA is looking into that. How many tournaments should be on Lake Chickamauga each week? Like, it's,
agreed.
You know, there should be a harder process to put these things through. Like, it's, at the end of the day, this isn't a basketball tournament that you're running out of a facility each week. If this is a ecosystem that we're utilizing for sport, and that's something we need to take a better care of. And I think that's what it comes down to, Kyle. I think you make a great point. Like, there's so, like, the high school national championship was what, like, almost 500 boats. Like, I want to know how that's a championship
a boat? That's 1,000 anglers.
Yeah, it's. I think that's what we got to be looking at more right now, more than anything, more than a technology. But there was one thing that actually made me laugh the other day of somebody saying, "Be like, oh, I wish it was the old days when they caught them without technology," and it flashed back to like the early 2000s with Edwin Evers dropping on 2D, and it was just like, It's nothing's changed but the angle of our head, the way we're fishing. Like, it's guys have been fishing off the bank for a long time. Like, it started back with David Fritz. Like, it's, you know, even before him, you know, it was, I don't know. This is becoming regurgitated forward facing sonar talk, but
that's all I ever hear. Like, I get on social media and that's all I see. It's everywhere you look. And I'm not for or against it. I don't care, dude. Just whatever. Let people that actually need to look into it, look into it. But until they make a decision, I'm going to use it. And I think Kyle can say the same. I mean, it's what it is. If they take it away, good. I'm happy with that. Perfectly fine.
Yeah, I'm like very, very like 99% there, to the point where I just want to be like, rename Serious Angler to the No Forward Facing Sonar Talk podcast. So that we just you stop talking about it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Well, so with that, let's switch gears, because we're going to wrap things up here with you guys here in a second. It's been super cool to get you guys on here. And I think we should make this a thing, like the next couple events, and we'll get you boys back on together and see who's getting the best room in the Airbnb type of deal.
Who wants to kill? Who wants to knock the other one out first, right? Like that type of deal.
Yeah, but
you gave me bad intel.
let me ask you guys this. Because, Kyle, I don't know if we've asked you this before, Kyle. But if you guys say fishing right now, like fishing across the world was banned. Couldn't fish anything whatsoever. What would your guys' plan B career choice be if you could choose?
Sales.
Sales for what?
I could sell ice to an animal, bro.
You're the guy from Wolf of Wall Street that could sell you this pen?
Yes. I just love, truthfully, like, to be honest, like, I love, you know, interacting with people, meeting new people. I like, you know, I feel like I can get along. A lot of people don't like me, I'm sure, but I like everyone. Like, I truly have no, I'm not like super judgmental. Like, I just like interacting with people. So I think that suits well for, you know, it sets up well for, like, you know, a sales position in, you know, I don't know what it would be. I like, you know, sports, skiing, like, you know, being in the outdoors as a whole is something that I've always been passionate about. So I have to be selling something I'm passionate about for like, you know, longevity purposes, because it gets kind of old selling things that you don't care about. But that would be, yeah, I would probably go into sales in some outdoor industry. If fishing didn't exist, though, I would quickly be jumping out that window.
Speaking of the window, is that 100 balloon behind you?
Caroline put it up for me when I got home.
Nice.
Yeah, she's a nice girlfriend.
Should just time to your truck when you go drive.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Can you imagine if I rolled up to the third elite event like still with the 100? Then I'll be like, this guy,
I just want the folks to know that because Kyle, I'll say you've done a really good job of like branding yourself. And there's some people that have been attaching onto that. I just want people to know this is not Kyle that is on the Elites now doing this for his brand. This is since the moment I met Kyle pre-COVID, he's always been this way.
What, jacked up?
No, you're just like always like ready to go. Like you're like your opens picture. That's how you've always been. Just like jacked up, high on energy.
Dude, that opens picture will I'm gonna get at some point.
Plus, here, have you ever seen his opens picture? It's
awful. No, but I got an even better one. He has accumulated 3 chins now.
3 chins. Elite Series freshman 15 giving on.
Kyle. No, dude, it's not even that. Like I'm not like I have not gained weight since like probably freshman year of college. The problem is when I go up on that stage and then like hold them up, I'm like all excited. So like I live for my
look at that. Oh my gosh. It's pretty hilarious. You need to go look at his day one picture from Toledo. It's a good one.
I'll pull it up for you.
Well, Wes, while he's pulling that up, because it's we're gonna let you guys go here in a second. And it's your first time on the show. We always ask everybody when they come on the show, but then we'll also as we're exiting, we have a question of if you could sit down and have dinner and drinks with 3 different people, they don't have to be fishing. They could be alive 1,000 years ago, alive now. It doesn't matter. What 3 people would you bring to dinner and pick their brain?
Say that again. Pick the dinner and what now?
So, like, what 3 people? Sorry, any 3 people in the world?
He doesn't understand normal questions.
Any 3 people in the world? They could be sports. Doesn't have to be fishing. 3 people that you would sit down, have steaks and a beer, and pick their brain.
That's pretty tough, right there. I don't know. Probably, I'm just gonna go with 3 fishermen, just because.
Yeah, that's
That's just easier. You didn't caught me off guard outside the fishing industry, but probably Rick Klun, Jason Christie, and Gerald Swindle.
That was a good one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Just so everyone knows,
I had to put 3 chins on my classic squad.
Oh, that's real good.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, wasn't that the one you posted talking about your chins too?
Probably. Look at that, dude. There's like 80 chins. It's not even 3.
That is the I gotta weigh in these fish, but I also really gotta go take a shit face.
Yeah, literally.
You ever see like Master of Disguise? Kyle is like, am I not turtly enough for the turtle club? Like, trying to tuck in the shirt there.
He just gets a little excited, you know. He likes to hold them higher and higher and higher and just squeeze them up and his.
Awesome.
You guys start doing like neck exercises, right? So you get rid of the triple.
Yeah, they have like the thing, the ball that you can put in your mouth, like
the chin, like
yeah, to make sure your like skin's tucked. Or maybe I'll just get like one of those surgeries that like has my whole face, like you know what I mean.
You're gonna be the first guy with a plastic surgeon rat boat.
Can you imagine like
Botox?
Doctor
sponsored by Botox.
Yeah. You're just gonna get the steel plate in your neck, so it's easier for scoping.
Yeah, no, that we're gonna need steel. You know, in 10 years, I'll be like, "Hey, Wesley, you find him today, buddy?"
Like, wait, dude, what? I was gonna blow that up.
There. Yeah, yeah, like you know, you're walking past and you're like, "You catch him?" Yeah.
Never change, Kyle. Never change.
God, it's funny.
That's awesome. Well, boys, before we get you guys off here, is there anything else you guys want to bring up? The folks need to know or anything like that before we get on to the classic.
I'm just gonna work it. You need to ask Kyle about the classic. I didn't make it this year.
I think we're good, dude. I'm hoping everyone who's watching comes to the classic. And by the way, Bassmaster's having that. Dude, so cool that Bassmaster's having the tailgate with Mark Zona and Ronnie Moore. Like, you know how everyone – did you see that, Bailey?
There's a tailgate?
Oh, dude. Yeah, yeah. Go look at Bassmaster. So they set up – there's a tailgate, and they're going to have it like, you know how before football games, like Tony is up there.
Like college game day.
Yeah, and everyone's behind them. They're having that. So they're going to be like live commentating, and there's like a tailgate with like beer. It's going to be super cool, man.
Outside?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's going to be cool. Is that going to be like on site at the launch or something?
No, I think it might be in Tulsa. So
I'm going to get a giant billboard like they do on college game day of your opens picture. And I'm just going to have it in the background.
Don't get to split get it. Split opens open
and triple, you know and triple chin and put then in now.
If I make the top 10, you have to do that.
I'll do it. I'll definitely do it.
Or one of the big heads with just his eyes from the open picture.
We'll never know if you make the top 10. If you make the third day, top 25.
Oh, okay. True. I forgot.
That's an Instagram post right there. It's like, there's the Hackney stink eye, but then there's the Kilpatrick eye.
Yeah.
Oh, there's into your soul.
Dude, I don't know. Yeah. The first ever top 10 I made was wild. If you saw that one, I won't pull it up, but it was crazy. I was like,
pull it up.
I said, okay.
You said it. Crazy eye, Kyle.
Is it Chesapeake Bay, Kyle?
Yeah. Oh. Chesapeake Bay. It was insane. Like they hit me with the flash at just the perfect time.
It's always the flash. Always.
Oh,
Lord. I just looked crazy, dude. Wait.
Oh yeah. Wait here. Hold on. Let me blow this up.
Yep. I was like
golden.
Crazy.
I'm not nervous. You're nervous. That's awesome. Well, boys, appreciate you guys taking the time out. And obviously, you. Kyle, good luck at the Classic coming up here. If we don't talk to you, I'll probably see you media day.
Yeah.
But Wes, hopefully I'll run into you at the Classic Expo, get to introduce myself.
Yeah.
And man, I'm serious. I think another couple events and we'll let make this a regular thing. Get you boys on here.
Yeah, bring it on. We'll get to talk about all kinds of good stuff. We'll have more to talk about, I'm sure, by then.
Yeah.
That's for damn sure. All right. Well, boys, appreciate it. And we'll talk to you guys real soon.
Yeah. Thank you.
Peace. All right. There we have it with Kilpatrick and Wesley Gore. That would definitely be an entertaining house to be in. Oh my God. Being on the road, dude.
Can we just talk about how you just had to lead them with questions and they took up Kyle took up most of the show.
So hey, that's why he's a pro. Yeah. That's why he's a pro. He's like Tuma, man. It's his show. We're just here. We just provide the platform. They're the hosts. We don't run the show, guys. This is every guest. It's their show. Yeah, ours.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, thanks again to those boys for taking the time to jump on. It's definitely a cool dynamic, and it's pretty impeccable seeing what the rookies are doing thus far this season. But it'll also be interesting to see how they do when we leave the state of Texas. So we'll be keeping up with that, obviously. Now we're going to be starting our part two of the show. We got Mr. Andrew Hayes from Tackle Talk and Trevor Lowe from Omnia coming on here in a second. We'll bring them on here, but a quick message from X2 Power.
In the world of battery power, a word to the wise. Compromise elsewhere.
All right, guys. Hope you guys enjoyed that episode there with Kyle and Wesley. Great dudes, and they're doing really well so far on the Bassmaster Elite Series. As we wrapped up that show, just know that next episode, this week's obviously a little bit different, being from the fact that we're recording this. It was Thursday Night Live, so you get some back-to-back episodes. But the next episode is going to be with Trevor Lowe from Omnia Fishing, as well as Andrew Hayes from the Tackle Talk podcast. And we're going to do a little game of fish it, box it, or trash it. And things got pretty fun. But nonetheless, appreciate you guys for always tuning into this show. If you can, please leave us a rating and review. We got much more info coming and more on the next episode. So appreciate y'all. You guys are amazing, and we'll see you on the next episode. Well, that was an awesome show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. If you can and your app allows it, please leave us a rating and review. It really helps us get seen more, which allows us to access more time and more variables to be able to bring to the show to make it better for you guys. So hope you enjoyed it. And if you did and you liked some of the things we talked about in this episode and want to check out our show partners, all of that is in every single show description. You can click down there. It's got all of our discount codes, all of our links to our show partners, where you guys can go and support the people that support this show and help us make this show happen. And of course, this show does not happen without you guys. You guys know we appreciate you. You're the Searsanger fam. You're the reason we're here. Appreciate y'all, and we'll see y'all on the next one.